Hello, I'm Janet Gallen, and I welcome you to Love Letters Live. This is a program of gratitude, really, and appreciation and love, and of course they're all connected. And I say often, and I like saying often, that love letters are for anyone at any time and for any reason whatsoever. And I must admit that even though I think I've seen it all, I never have. I am always surprised by someone's really creative use of love letters. And they can be historical, they can be personal, emotional, it doesn't matter. And you'll see today that it really doesn't matter who gets your love letter. The truth of the matter is it's important that there is a love letter because it's your chance to put your best self on paper. Every love letter you write is part of your personal history, either physical, social, intellectual, spiritual. It doesn't matter. Put your best self on paper, stamp it, and mail it to someone and make someone else's life richer. Our guest today is Alicia Escott, who's an exceptional artist. And Alicia, I'm going to go right to you. Tell us where you were raised and at what stage in your life did you know you had this amazing talent?
Well, to be an artist, first off, I was raised in Massachusetts, and I've been here in California for about 8 years, though. I did my undergraduate work in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I am one of those art lifers.
You knew when you were little?
I knew when I was little, and I think I was just stubborn.
What do you mean?
I think I just said I was going to be an artist when I was 8, and I just went ahead and did it.
And your parents reacted how? I mean, they could see you at
You know,
talent,
it's
right?
One of those things that everybody always thinks you're going to grow out of.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's that kind of tenacity and stubbornness that realizes art, because it's a pretty difficult life. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty difficult choice. So
now all your schooling and everything stayed within that realm. I mean, you
it
took
did.
Art
I mean, I yeah, yes. I've always been kind of engaged by other subject matters, and my work deals with a lot of different issues.
Well, I want to get to that in a minute, mm-hmm. too. So you went to art school?
Mm-hmm. Twice.
Twice. Okay, tell us about that.
Well, I did my undergraduate at an art school, and then I took some time off and then went back for graduate work.
And then you have actual jobs, things that you're commissioned to do?
No, I work more independently.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you're able to make, it's just, okay, let's talk about your work because this is astounding. Now, what I've seen on your website, first of all, you actually draw those, like that dead flamingo,
mm-hmm.
you drew that, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so all of these things that look like they could be photographs.
Yes.
Are your...
They're drawn from photographs.
But still, they're your drawings.
Yeah, so, and I'm, with them, I'm always recalling back to the original photograph.
Uh-huh.
And although they are a departure, with that project that you're talking about specifically, I was really interested in how images get circulated and
talk about that a little bit.
Pairing
that means.
Well, just I would find images in National Geographic or uh-huh. other places, and how these images live
uh-huh.
and how they take on a life of their own.
Oh, I was going to say that. So you look at it as the images can have a life of their own.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Okay.
And so I was pairing those with single-use disposable containers that also have this life of their own. And I mean, we shouldn't get into this because it's a whole other project.
I'd like to.
But
can we take five minutes to get into it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so interesting to see that you draw these things on disposable plastics and
mm-hmm.
go ahead.
Yeah, so that project, I was, again, pairing these images that I would find, and I would sort of reference the issues that those articles brought up, and then I was drawing them on these single-use plastic containers, which I would sort of research the provenance of. And
what does that mean?
It means where they would have come from.
Uh-huh.
And what they would have packaged. And then I later on actually had the opportunity to go to China. I with those drawings, I had originally, they were supposed to be non-recyclable plastics.
Uh-huh.
And then in San Francisco, at that time, you could only recycle 2, 4, and 5
mm-hmm.
plastics.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2008, in April, so exactly a few years ago in April, for Earth Day, San Francisco increased its recycling program. And the reason they did that was because, if you recall, that was when we had that spike in oil around that time. So the price of oil went up, so plastic as a commodity became more valuable. So San Francisco said, okay, let's collect more plastic, and we'll be able to find a broker for this who will buy this this commodity. And so when that happened, it kind of changed what the work was about. And I actually, because they had been these non-recyclable plastics, and now they were
so
recyclable.
It made a difference to you whether they were, because you wanted to use non-recyclable.
Yeah, well, that had been the premise of the whole project.
So is that because that non-recyclable plastics are total waste? I mean, you have to throw them away, and then they glut up things. And if they're the easel or the thing that you use to draw on, they take on a value. Mm-hmm. They don't get thrown away any more than you would throw away a canvas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it would be a drop in the bucket, the amount that I was saving, certainly.
Unless it caught on, and then people all over started to use these things.
Yeah, or just making people think about value in different terms. You know, taking this thing that has no value and then putting it in the art world, which has this priceless commodity.
Really?
But so anyhow, I then, once those became recyclable, I sort of questioned, well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And I actually took the physical drawings that were on thrown out plus these containers, and I put them in recycling bins. So I recycled the drawings so that they wouldn't exist anymore. And then I actually had the opportunity to go to China and to see what that means when we recycle something, and to sort of do some kind of a hypothetical tracing of what it means for something to be recycled.
Why did going to China make you realize what that meant?
Well, because in San Francisco, all of our plastic recycling all gets sent to China for processing, because that's where all manufacturing happens. And so at the time, I was really engaged by those ideas and what that means, and sort of undermining that. And so, yeah, so that kind of fundamentally changed that whole project. And it was really interesting because, as I said, the reason that they became recyclable was because that the price of oil had gone up, and they were thought of as a higher commodity
that could be resold.
That could be resold. However, immediately after, what happened was the stock market crashed and manufacturing slowed. And once manufacturing slowed, less got produced. So actually all of these plastics got shipped to China, including my drawings, and then stockpiled in China. And so it's just kind of tracing how we can't sort of understand these sort of late capitalist economic systems that we are a part of as consumers.
I have a question. Is that hard for you to do one of your drawings, they just toss it?
I would think.
They're so precise and they're so exquisite.
Although,
do you think somebody sees it and then picks it out? I would.
Who knows? Okay. Who knows? You know, you can't know. And that sort of mystery is really interesting to me. So I actually wrote my thesis on the hypothetical, what that means, where those go. And that is around the time that I started really realizing that a lot of the genesis of my work is just about loss. And that brought me into some of the other projects that you would have seen on my website, and then eventually to this love letter
project.
Okay,
so why don't you mention a couple of them for us? And let's give your website, please.
Yeah,
this is so worth looking
name.
At.
It's aliciaescott.com.
aliciaescott.com.
Yeah.
Go there.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the plug. Yeah, so then I, over time, I've become less interested in this material of plastic in terms of its chemical constituents and it being recycled, but actually using that more as a metaphor to talk about the packaging of our lives and how images do live, and how the ideas of things as signifiers in contemporary society almost engulfs their reality. And so I started making these life-size drawings that were equally photorealistic, but these life-size drawings of animals that had been displaced from places of which they were signifiers.
Like what?
So I think the one that's most well-known is the grizzly bear, which is the California state animal. Mm-hmm. However, there hasn't been one here since, well, the last one was seen in August of 1923.
No.
Yeah. In California.
Did they move north?
They needed to be forced out in order for us to sort of settle California
as
the West.
Them out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really engaged in that idea of something becoming the representation of something else. So California has this idea of being the Wild West and this branding. But in order for us to co-opt that idea, we had to remove essentially what caused that. So, which was the grizzly bear and these wild things. So in order for us to kind of take that on and as sort of the brand of California, we actually had to remove that really. Does that make sense?
Well, kind of. But what I want to ask, you said you did a life-size drawing of this.
Yeah, so they're all life-sized.
It's huge, in
yes.
other words.
Uh-huh. Yes, they're quite big.
You must use scaffolding or ladders or?
No, I because it's the plastic, it's really malleable, so I get
see.
To move it around.
Because you're nowhere near as big as a grizzly bear.
Yeah, no, that drawing is larger than I am,
okay.
certainly.
But it's still on plastic.
It's still on plastic. And the plastic really then becomes a metaphor for packaging and for branding. So that the plastic usually has its own sort of packaging labels, and then the image is layered with that.
So I have a question about that. I know my mind keeps going back to this. You're talking about doing pictures on the tops of plastic containers.
Yeah,
and
so that
I saw that on your website, and you say that. So I'm guessing that people don't throw those out. It's like that's saved from the garbage bin. What if? And you said it's just a drop in a bucket. What if schools started to? You know, parents of school children are ever collecting their toilet paper rolls and their paper towel rolls and things at home that can be used for art projects in schools. I don't know if you remember this when you were a school child.
Yeah, when I was in graduate school, before those plastics became recyclable, most of my colleagues and classmates would actually bring their non-recyclable containers to my studio.
But that's just your studio. What about every single public grammar school? Wouldn't that be kind of a nice thing to do?
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, I think the challenges we're up against right now
maybe so. Yes.
are really dire.
Yes.
You know, I have a lot of hope for the future, but not in sort of a way where I think, recycling's going to work or we're going to come around as a society.
We have to stop doing certain things.
Who knows?
Okay.
Who knows? And I think that's where the love letters become really interesting, because I think those sort of talk about loss.
Okay, so you had started to write. You have written love letters.
Yeah.
And you want to talk to us about those and maybe share some of them with us? So interesting.
So I guess where that started from is I had, with those life-size drawings, I had become to use those as sort of these shamanistic props where, as I said, they were life-size, so a lot of them are my size or bigger than me. And so I would actually sort of get behind them and get inside of them, and I was working with video, and I'm doing these kind of esoteric, strange videos, but that have a lot of heart to them. And so I had this idea of... I had just done this cougar drawing for Berkeley, and I had this idea of getting inside of that drawing and actually reading famous suicide notes. So I had gotten Virginia Woolf's suicide note, and I was reading it inside of this drawing, and it was kind of my personifying this animal.
Now, which animal was this?
This was a mountain lion, a cougar.
Yes, cougar,
for Berkeley, And there's a whole reasoning for my choosing that animal, but we don't need to get into that. So I'm personifying this animal and reading this letter, and I'm sort of taking on this idea of the animal actually committing suicide and sort of telling this to the human. Mm-hmm. And it's not kind of working with this letter. So I think to myself, oh, I'll start writing my own letters, my own sort of, and I was thinking at the time suicide notes, but then when they came out more as love letters and kind of apologies to these animals. Mm-hmm. And then at the time I had a friend who was out of town, so I went ahead and had just written one and decided I should send it to him. And I was just thinking he would like it because it had a lot of like sort of interesting little details and factual information, and the way all of the letters sort of play with time and technology.
But you said details, because mm-hmm. good love letters of any sort are filled with details.
Yeah.
That's how we know you're paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think that always, this sort of approaching the universal through the individual, mm-hmm. you know, taking the smallest point. You know, you can, I heard somebody talking recently about, you know, if you want to talk about the universe, start with a crack in the sidewalk.
Yes. I like that.
So I went ahead and sent this friend of mine this letter, and then it dawned on me, I was like, this is how they should be. And so I just started I started pairing them with these photographs that I would find, and I would pick out the photographs, thinking about different people, and then I would pair them with the different letters. And that kind of opened things up. Because having sort of an image of another animal convolutes the letter that is maybe written to.
So were these letters to the animals or on behalf of the animals?
They're to the animals.
Okay.
So it's sort of my writing the letter to the animal, but thinking about the animal as lover.
Yes. Are you going to read us?
Yeah,
I can read you some of these.
Yeah, I don't want to read.
It's a complicated concept to understand.
It is.
If you show
it
us.
Is. And I don't want to read too many of them because I there's something so great about people getting these letters. Uh-huh. So I'd rather just send them to people. But I do want to read maybe a couple of them.
I'd love you to.
Okay.
And maybe with a little background, like you could say the animal and.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. February 19th, 2011. Letter to Abudabal Hartebeest. Extinct, 1923. My darling, it has been nearly a lifetime. What can I say? I did not know that I loved you until it was too late. I understand now that I held on to you that last year in Paris out of sheer desperation. I think sometimes if you could have stayed with me only a half century longer, we could have banked your genes, and somehow your absence would be incomplete. We might even have combined genes together. I think it is possible now. Still, though, it is just my holding on, my singular need to record what has happened, like that terrible zoo with all those European children. Oh, how they loved you just as I did. But really, by then you were a shadow of your former self. I want to tell you, after all these years, that part of the world we knew then is back again in all the newspapers. It was inevitable. How could I not have thought the memories of you would not eventually flood back, like those waters before the dam? Can you still remember those wet seasons together? How everything transformed almost overnight? I have dreamed sometimes about the time just before the Sahara was formed, before the last ice age. Can you recall? Anyway, the floods only exist in textbooks now. As you might imagine, much has changed. Our population doubled again. We have this thing called the economy, and our compulsion to record has brought us the internet. It's a miracle, really. Whenever I get nostalgic, I look for you there. It says, to a modern conservationist, this animal would have seemed an ideal subject for rescue breeding program, but the chance was missed. Again, looking back, how human of me. Our time together was hardly a blink. I guess that is all we get. You were everywhere. You clung around too much. Really, you were such a drag sometimes with your incessant hurting. And then just like that, you were gone forever. Anyway, my darling, you live on in everything. You understand this, right? My love, forever. Alicia Bainbridge Escott.
Oh, that just gives me chills. That is just so heartbreaking. That's just wonderful.
Thank you.
Yes. I mean, you know, all that's in it, first of all, the specifics, what you loved, what you remember, the immediacy of it, and how connected this being and this presence is to you and how much part of your life. Just beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
One more?
Yeah. Now, or when I could also
just... You sent this to a friend of yours?
Yeah. So I've sent a lot of these. I've written a lot of different letters all to different animals, and then I've sent them to a lot of different friends. It started off just small, and then it's been kind of compulsive. I just want to send everyone love letters.
Oh, good. Isn't that nice? Because that's what, you know, one of the things that is so important is love letters. It's not a one-shot deal.
Yeah.
It is really a way of life at its best.
Well, it's exciting being an artist.
Yes.
And, you know, you're used to this one format, and then all of a sudden you have this other format. And it's been very interesting because I have now sent out about 160 of these.
Oh, you have?
Oh, I have, yeah.
And how do you choose the people to send them to?
Friends, people I think would enjoy them.
Do you send them to zookeepers and people who deal with animals?
I haven't done too much of that. Anyone who's working in those fields, I know a lot of people in kind of... working around conservation and the environment. So I have sent them to those people.
You don't even have to send them to people you know.
Yeah, I've started to do that a little bit. But I definitely want them to be gifts. And so,
that's
I mean, there are a few times.
There is a gift custom designed by you. Absolutely.
So yeah. And again, they're all paired with, an old photograph from different eras. I mean, some of the photographs are quite old, and the photographs are of animals or of people interacting with animals. And the idea is then it can be, the letter can almost be from the Rottweiler that's in the photograph.
Uh-huh.
Or it's really open to interpretation.
Yes.
And then like with this, and I want them to be open. I don't want too much specific information. But it is interesting, then some people will start Googling the animals.
Yes. I'm thinking of those dioramas at museums to have these up there. How gripping that would be.
Yeah, I want there to be sort of minimal information, though, in a space. But it is true, like with that letter I just read, the Boudabal hardy beast. So that was native to Egypt and Algeria. So when I'm referencing that area of the world being back in the newspapers, I mean, that sort of...
And you feel these losses very deeply.
I do.
I can see that.
I do. Yes. Yeah.
Well, read us one more, if you would.
Sure.
$160 million, that's huge.
Well, they're not all...
it's a huge number.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that's the amount of people I've sent them to. Maybe I'll read the thick-billed ground dove.
Okay.
January 2011. Letter to a thick-billed ground dove, extinct 1927. My love. Last week, I set the clock on my iPhone to December 18th, 1914. I was hoping I would be able to find you there. But it did no good. Everything was just the same as it is now, and you were gone. So I'm sending you this letter via post because I see no other way. It is too long to send in text, if that were even an option these days. So much has happened since you left. Where do I begin? Not long after, the stock market crashed. Then they fixed it. But it would happen again. Then after that, we discovered a relationship between mass and energy. But man alive, this has some drawbacks. Then came rock and roll. More than anything, I wish I could show you rock and roll. You would love it, I'm sure. And then there was the telephone, and then answering machines, and call waiting, and then caller ID, and now you can have that with you always. Honest. There would never need to be these distances anymore. But really, that is not what I wanted to say. How do I explain? You weren't the only one to leave. It's been quite a time. We've tried to stem the tide now, but well, I read they have little hope. I was foolish. The last time we saw you, no one thought it was goodbye forever. Did you know then? I think sometimes that you did. We looked everywhere for you in 2004 or 2005. Of course, that was much, much too late. I'm sorry. The little lines under my eyes don't seem to go away when I stop smiling anymore. What I mean is, it happens so slowly that you don't even realize how quickly it has passed by. There are rock doves everywhere, as those places we used to know are mostly concrete now. They remind me of you. The rock doves, of course. I can never forget. Yours always, Alicia Bainbridge Escott.
I'm going to cry. This is too wonderful. You know, the way you have, that you set the time on your iPhone. I mean, the way you've combined today with eons ago as if it is, and of course it is, one time.
Yeah.
That is to say,
that's such a wonderful way of putting it. Oh. Yeah, it is one time. Yeah, I've been sort of, I'm kind of meandering with this idea of, I mean, I'm thinking about issues around climate change and ocean acidification.
You know, you are such an important historian with this. This is just mm-hmm. an exceptional way of recording history and yeah. Telescoping it so that we are all one. And I know we don't have too much time left, but I'm hoping that eventually this will be one exceptional book, Love Letters to Extinct.
Well, I think it kind of encompasses my whole sort of the drawings that I'm
yes.
making. I think these are another layer on them. And then I've been using these ready-made objects and just presenting them to the world. And I'm sort of, you know, when I was saying climate change, I mean, we're up against major evolutionary change. And
yes.
I'm sort of, there's a lot of sadness
but
in
I
that,
think what
but there's also like a hope and there's sort of a, this is how it's been.
Yes.
And our species may be here and it may not be here. And
but ultimately, one of the things about love letters and yours in particular here are they are so instructive and compelling. It's not the kind of thing you want to turn away from. And one of the important things in writing a good love letter is that you want to write something that's going to get read. Otherwise, what's the point? These are exceptional. I want to thank you so much for coming to do this.
Thank you.
This is just a treasure, this show, and what you're doing, and you
thank
also.
You.
Thank you so much.